It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Noted Appalachian music expert Ted Olson says the Bristol Sessions may have been the big bang of country music, but the Johnson City Sessions in Tennessee are notable too.
The Johnson City Sessions, in my opinion, are very important because they show Appalachian music in the widest possible variety at the cusp of the Great Depression.
A special report coming up on this West Virginia morning. A task force trying to find solutions to the state's drug problem conducted a meeting in Bridgeport last night to ask people living in north central West Virginia how to attack the problem in their area. The task force is one of six across the state created after Governor Tomlin signed an executive order in 2011 creating the Governor's Advisory Council on Substance Abuse. Those task forces bring together business and community leaders along with law enforcement and the medical community to find ways to fight substance abuse in the state. Ashton Mara attended the Bridgeport meeting last night and brings us this report.
In a room usually rented out for wedding receptions or retirement parties, nearly 100 citizens from around north central West Virginia gathered to discuss solutions to a growing problem, not just in their communities, but in communities throughout the state. That problem, drug abuse.
For Clarksburg, West Virginia, if I would ask you what a norm would be for Clarksburg, West Virginia, with regard to substance use and abuse, what would you say they would think about Clarksburg, West Virginia?
Kathy Paxton, director of the Division on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse for the Department of Health and Human Resources, received responses like bath salts, heroin, and prescription drugs to her question. All are things heavily abused in Clarksburg and the surrounding areas. As Paxton and her group of facilitators began the Governor's Regional Substance Abuse Task Force meeting in Bridgeport, they split those in attendance into smaller groups to begin discussing the priorities of the area, including prevention, early intervention, treatment, and recovery. Groups were directed to pick the most important two from that list, which will be considered at the state level for grant money awarded through the DHHR. At a table near the back of the room, Kim Griffith from Doddridge County advocated for early education as a prevention method.
Hit it at home to where these kids know what's the possibility, the ramifications of possibly leading this type of lifestyle. Or
Tasha Moneypenny Knight of Clarksburg says school counselors are key to early intervention.
I've had children come to me and say that they've gone to their counselor and said that they felt really depressed and down, and the counselor has told them, "We'll come back when you feel suicidal." And so between that time, they could be finding a drug that will help them cope with it.
They do not know how to handle the situation. I don't think it's lack of just sympathy or empathy. I think it's lack of knowledge, of training. They do not know how to handle these situations. How can you treat someone if you don't know how to treat them?
The table over, Jason Toast of Buchanan shared stories of how drugs have affected his life.
At 17 years old, I was charged with trafficking, and from that point on, I've never, ever been able to get no type of assistance from nothing or nobody since the age of 17.
He and Shannon Garrett of Weston were discussing legislative changes in the ability to qualify for government aid programs like food stamps and housing assistance after being convicted of a drug crime.
I think this would be great, but I am for trying to keep people off of thinking that they need to get on food stamps and welfare.
We can't look at like they shouldn't have done that, they shouldn't have did this. We got to look at that they already done it. Now that they've already done it, what can we do to help them?
Similar discussions continued at tables around the room before the group came back together to take a survey on the priorities they want to focus on in their region. Region 4, which includes 13 counties from Monongalia to Braxton and Doddridge to Tucker, decided their first priority was the continuation of prevention resource officers, or police officers stationed in schools, also called PROs. Their second, expanding the Recovery Coach Network, both things Paxton says the region has focused state grant money toward in the past.
That's where a lot of the $7.5 million went to in this region. Your priority was recovery coaches. So you have more recovery coaches in this region than any other region. So therefore, I think that people recognize how important they are and how much they can do. So they want to expand it. So it's exactly the same thing as the PROs.
Statewide, Paxton says regions are also placing a 1-800 call center at the top of their lists. It would serve as a central place for anyone to call to find resources within their communities for treatment and recovery. Regional meetings will continue over the next few weeks throughout the state. For a schedule of those meetings, visit our website, wvpublic.org. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Bridgeport.
West Virginia University's baseball team is going to have a new home in a few years. A groundbreaking on the stadium occurred yesterday. But as Beneduccio reports, it's also going to be big for the community.
The stadium is located in the community of Granville, near Morgantown, off of I-79. That part of Monongalia County is growing by leaps and bounds. With the stadium will come a new interchange for easier access from the interstate to the ballpark. It's been a lot of change for Patricia Lewis, the mayor of Granville. She's been the mayor since 1991.
In my wildest imagination, I could never dream that a town, a small town in Monongalia County, could become home to a WVU sports team. So we are excited. It's a wonderful thing.
The baseball stadium will also host entertainment events like concerts, as well as games for a minor league baseball team. Lewis says it's hopefully going to bring even more growth to her community.
This is an exciting chapter for us. We are a small community. All the development up here, has been wonderful for our economics, for our small town.
Now this is a team right here. This is a team. Yeah. Close in, move in, line in.
Guys, get a little closer up there.
Why don't we closer together?
All of us squeeze in.
And sideways in here.
Yeah, that's all sideways.
We gotta lean out.
Slide down a little bit. Slide a little closer together. Here we go. All right, here we go. Everybody ready? We got a shovel in the dirt?
Yeah, you better get up there.
I'm three. I'm three. One, two, three. Hey! One more time.
One more time.
One more time. Here we go. That was practice. That was just practice. There we go. On three. One, two, three.
The camera's pointed that way.
Come on, man.
All the cameras are pointed
that way. Real quick, if I could have some quiet, one final word from our coach, Randy Mazey.
Randy Mazey, the head coach of the WVU baseball team, says this new stadium will play a vital role in the stability and success of his program.
Well, you know, with the move to the Big 12 conference that we made last year, it's one of the best baseball conferences in the nation. If you want to be nationally competitive with teams like that, your facilities have to be competitive. And I think we're not only going to be competitive, but I think we're going to surpass a lot of programs in this league with the facility that we're planning on building.
Officials hope the stadium will be ready for the 2015 baseball season. The minor league team expected to make the stadium home will be from the New York Penn League. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:38. Sunny and breezy today. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s. Wind gusts could be up to 25 miles per hour. Mind how you go this morning. There is some patchy, dense fog. Mostly clear overnight with lows in the 30s and 40s. Partly sunny on Saturday. There is a chance of rain Saturday afternoon. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s. Sunny and clear on Sunday.
And this is your chance to support West Virginia Morning. Thank you, Beth Voorhees, and the crew from West Virginia Public Radio's news department. I'm Scott Finnem, executive director here. I'm joined by Chuck Anzalevich, one of our hosts, and we are here to ask you to support that sort of local programming from your neighbors and your community. The number to call is 800-723-4687.
We have less than an hour and a half before 9 o'clock this morning, and 9 o'clock is kind of a deadline for us because we have a challenge grant of $3,500 that we can get if we, we've whittled it down to less than $9,000. So if we can get $8,700, less than $9,000 between 9 and now and 9 o'clock this morning, we will have an extra $3,500 from one of our generous contributors. We also had a call from Morgantown, West Virginia, from a listener who really enjoys our programming, and they think that we're doing a great job. Also, Nan Brown of Wheeling, West Virginia, loves the new website, and our new website is wvpublic.org. You can go there and check it out. All kinds of interesting information about our programming, the people that work at West Virginia Public Radio, and also, of course, a way for you to contribute to West Virginia Public Radio. Go to our website at wvpublic.org or call us right now at 1-800-RADIO-87.
The rest of West Virginia Morning is coming up in just a minute. We know we can do this together. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family, your neighbors, your community. Do it for everyone who relies on West Virginia Public Radio. Do it to be part of something that makes West Virginia and our region and the world a better place. That's the sort of person you are, and you've just been waiting for the right time. Well, the right time is now. We are in the final hours of this campaign, another day or so, and it'll be over. And we want you to feel that great sense of relief and warmth and ownership when you call 800-723-4687, or when you go online to our beautiful brand new website, wvpublic.org, click that Donate Now button. We have another $8,716 to go. Thousands of people are hearing us. We know if you call in, we'll make it at 800-723-4687.
When Ralph Peer held recording sessions for Victor Records in the state line town of Bristol, Tennessee, Virginia in 1927, he discovered the Carter family and Jimmy Rogers and essentially started the country music industry. Columbia Records wanted to get in on the Appalachian Field recording business, so the company sent one of its top producers to nearby Johnson City. A box set of those original Johnson City recordings has been released. Wayne Winkler of WETS in Johnson City, Tennessee, has this report.
Frank Buckley Walker had signed Bessie Smith to Columbia Records and was responsible for the first commercial recordings of Cajun music, but early country music was his specialty. He recorded Charlie Poole and his North Carolina Ramblers, Gid Tanner and Riley Puckett in New York. He did some recording in Atlanta, but Ralph Peer's successful recordings in Bristol inspired Walker and Columbia to try field recording in the same general area. So in October of 1928, Walker placed an ad in a Johnson City, Tennessee newspaper with the headline, "Can you sing or play old-time music?" That was how he set up the first of what became known as the Johnson City Sessions. 85 years later, the music Frank Walker recorded is being released in a 4-CD box set by Bear Family Records of Hamburg, Germany. Ted Olson of East Tennessee State University's Department of Appalachian Studies, who initiated and produced the Bristol Sessions, has done the same for the lesser-known Johnson City recordings. As with the Bristol set, he and British country music scholar Tony Russell have composed a lavish 136-page book detailing every aspect of the sessions, including photographs, biographies of the performers, a day-by-day session log, lyric sheets, and discographies.
Once the Bristol Sessions box set was put out in 2011 by the Bear Family Records label out of Germany, that same label took an interest, after I had a long conversation with them, in releasing this rest of the story, you know, the Johnson City Sessions. And so for the last, say, 15 months, my colleague on the project, Tony Russell, who's based in England, who's a country music scholar, we basically brought this story out of obscurity because there hadn't been much research conducted. We really had to get creative to find out who these people were and where they came from, why they came to Johnson City. How did their records sell? What were the rest of their creative lives like? Did they continue to play music after they kind of disappeared into obscurity?
Have you heard the many stories told by old and young with joys of the many deeds of daring that were done by the Johnson boy?
Hop up, pretty girls, don't be afraid. Hop up, pretty girls, don't be afraid. Hop up, pretty girls, don't be afraid. Hop up, pretty girls, don't be afraid.
Some of the performers at the Johnson City Sessions had recorded for Ralph Peer at the Bristol Sessions. The Grant brothers, Jack and Claude, had, along with Jack Pierce, been Jimmy Rogers' backing band. but Pierce separated them and recorded the band as the Tenevah Ramblers. Frank Walker recorded Jack and Claude Grant, Pierce and Claude Slagle as the Grant Brothers, but other acts didn't have nearly as much recording experience. One such group was the Motesville String Ticklers from West Virginia.
There were eight musicians in the band, and they all came down, according to the stories that the family tell, in the back of two cars, with the instruments placed into pillowcases because they could not afford actual instrument cases. They made two recordings here, are their only recordings that we have of this band. The one known as West Virginia Hills is considered the definitive recording of the West Virginia state song. It's a much prized recording that far too few people have ever heard.
Oh, the West Virginia hills, how unchanged they seem to stand, with their summits pointed skyward to the great almighty's land. Many changes I can see, which my heart with sadness fills, but no changes can be noticed in those West Virginia hills. Oh, the hills, beautiful hills, how I love the West Virginia hills. And the friends among the West Virginia hills.
When Frank Walker returned to Johnson City in October of 1929, he recorded some of the most memorable songs of the Johnson City sessions, including this one from an obscure group from North Carolina called the Bentley Boys, Down on Penny's Farm.
First of all, people probably have heard it before, perhaps in the context of the Harry Smith Anthology of American Folk Music, which is a legendary album that was released in the 50s that's credited with launching the urban folk revival of the 50s and 60s.
Come, you ladies and gentlemen, listen to the song. Sang it to you right, but you might think it's wrong. May make you mad, but I mean no harm. It's just about to run his own Penny's Farm. It's a hard times in the country out on Penny's Farm. You move out on Penny's Farm, plant a little crop of bagger and a little crop of corn. Come around and see you gonna flit and flot till you get yourself a mortgage on everything you got. It's a hard times in the country out on Penny's Farm.
This song has inspired a lot of musicians over the years. Bob Dylan, for example, dedicated not one song, but two songs to his love for this particular song.
Come here, ladies and gentlemen, listen to my song. Sing it to you right, but you might think it's wrong. Just a little glimpse of a star out town about an East Coast city that you all know well. It's hard times from the country living down in New York town.
Second of two Bob Dylan songs inspired by the Bentley Boys' Down on Penny's Farm, recorded in Johnson City, Tennessee in 1929.
One of the most famous people who came to Johnson City for the Johnson City sessions was Clarence Ashley. Clarence Ashley is a legendary musician who, in fact, is credited with having introduced the world to Doc Watson. Because Clarence Ashley recommended that Ralph Rinsler, who is affiliated with the Smithsonian, to come down to make a record of Doc Watson in the early 60s. And then, of course, Doc took off from there. But Clarence was famous in his own right with this marvelous voice, very high-pitched and mournful, and this unique frailing banjo style.
Oh, the cuckoo is a pretty bird. She wobbles as she flies, she never hollers cuckoo till the 4th day July. I've played cards in Dingbong. I've played cards in Spain. I'll bet you $10 I beat you next game.
Olson and co-writer Tony Russell were nominated for a Grammy Award for the book that accompanied the Bristol Sessions box set. The book accompanying the Johnson City box set is even more extensive and represents a tougher job tracking down information.
We had to work through secondary sources, namely family members who remembered people. And to find these people wasn't easy, but the way we did it was we put ads and articles in local papers all over the Appalachian area in eastern Kentucky, western North Carolina, and of course East Tennessee. And lo and behold, people started calling us and writing us from out of the blue, saying, we saw this article in the paper, and we'd like to tell you about our ancestors who played at the Johns City Sessions. So Tony Russell and I just started to gather the stories over the last 15 months based on this very rudimentary technique of getting the word out. And we were able to get some wonderful stories.
Next weekend, a series of events in Johnson City will celebrate the release of the box set, including an album release party at Johnson City's famed music venue, The Down Home, on Saturday night, followed by a recording of the public radio program Mountain Stage on Sunday night. Relatives of the performers at the original sessions will be honored at these events. But unfortunately for some of the performers at the original sessions, many of the records didn't sell well. Some were never even released, because the final day of the 1929 sessions coincided with the first day of the stock market crash. That's one reason the Johnson City sessions were not as well known as those that took place up the road in Bristol. But Ted Olson contends that the Johnson City sessions have their own special place in music history.
It may not have the kind of overarching impact of the Bristol sessions box set. I mean, after all, people have been calling the Bristol Sessions the Big Bang of country music for some years now. There's no comparable statement you can make about the Johnson City Sessions in the respect that they didn't necessarily create a genre almost, you know, single-handedly. We don't make any such claims for the Johnson City Sessions. The Johnson City Sessions, in my opinion, are very important because they show Appalachian music in the widest possible variety at the cusp of the Great Depression. And I think that's important because really the music that sold during the Great Depression tended to be more commercial music. The music on the Johnson City Sessions is kind of that last bastion of traditional music finding voice in a mass media environment. Three of the strongest records on the anthology of American folk music were recorded in Johnson City in 1928 and 1929. It's a quieter story. It's a story that gets, perhaps, you know, has gotten a lot less attention than the Bristol Sessions. But it's a story whose time has come.
For Inside Appalachia, I'm Wayne Winkler in Johnson City, Tennessee.
Going back, Johnson City, I'll go back and stay someday.
And West Virginia Public Radio's Mountain Stage will perform a live show at East Tennessee State University Sunday evening as part of the celebration for the release of this boxed set. And speaking of Mountain Stage, Bottle Rockets performs Big Lots of Love on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Okay, this song comes with a story. This is the oldest new song. This song's been around since last fall. Song comes with a story. See this guitar? Ain't it pretty? Don't you think this is a pretty guitar? I think this is a pretty guitar. I wanted this guitar for 20 years. 20 years I wanted this guitar. Money was never the issue. I'm a roots rock legend. I'm rolling in money. Made of money. Okay? Mountains of money. The issue was getting the wife's permission to spend the money on this guitar. That was the issue. 20 years of trying, and finally it came true, okay? She finally said, okay, you got yourself a credit card. You got a musician's friend credit card. Friend, go get you one. So they got back in stock. They had the color I wanted. It's the guitar of my dreams. I got it 2 years ago, and I haven't played anything since because I love it so much. So since my wife finally buckled under and decided to let me live the dream, I decided it would only be proper to write her a song on this guitar. A love song, because I really do love my wife, and I wanted to write her a really true love song on my new guitar. But here's the problem, is I've written love songs before and told her that they were about her, but they weren't really about her, and she knew that. Okay? It was like they weren't about other girls, they were about other things disguised as girls, and I told her they were about her, and she busted me immediately. So she's smart. She's a lot smarter than I am. So I had to write her a love song on this guitar that would not only be heartfelt, true, and like so honest that it would make her cry, but it would also have to make her cry because she knew I was thinking about her when I wrote it. So to do that, I had to come up with a clue. There had to be a clue just between her and me that she would know that when I put that clue in there that I was actually thinking about her because nobody else would have turned me on to that kind of an idea. So I thought about the clue for a while, and I realized what it is, and I never knew why she kept this between her and me. But she never really tells anyone else but me, and she tells me continually, and it's how much she loves shopping at Big Lots, okay? And she gets really great things from Big Lots, things I wouldn't even think they had at Big Lots. If I would have just waited, she probably could have found this guitar at Big Lots. But anyway, okay. So now we had it. Love song, honest love song was the goal. Big Lots was the clue. And this is what I came up with.
Rockets with Big Lots of Love. You can listen to this song again and more music on Mountain Stage Sunday afternoon at 2 here on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Board, and Ashton Mara. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees. Special report coming up on this West Virginia Morning. A task force trying to find solutions to the state's drug problem conducted a meeting in Bridgeport last night to ask people living in north central West Virginia how to attack the problem in their area. The task force is one of six across the state created after Governor Tomlin signed an executive order in 2011 creating the Governor's Advisory Council on Substance Abuse. Those task forces bring together business and community leaders along with law enforcement and the medical community to find ways to fight substance abuse in the state. Ashton Mara attended the Bridgeport meeting last night and brings us this report.
In a room usually rented out for wedding receptions or retirement parties, nearly 100 citizens from around north central West Virginia gathered to discuss solutions to a growing problem, not just in their communities, but in communities throughout the state. That problem, drug abuse.
For Clarksburg, West Virginia, if I would ask you what a norm would be for Clarksburg, West Virginia, with regard to substance use and abuse, what would you say they would think about Clarksburg, West Virginia?
Kathy Paxton, director of the Division on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse for the Department of Health and Human Resources, received responses like bath salts, heroin, and prescription drugs to her question. All are things heavily abused in Clarksburg and the surrounding areas. As Paxton and her group of facilitators began the Governor's Regional Substance Abuse Task Force meeting in Bridgeport, they split those in attendance into smaller groups to begin discussing the priorities of the area, including prevention, early intervention, treatment, and recovery. Groups were directed to pick the most important two from that list, which will be considered at the state level for grant money awarded through the DHHR. At a table near the back of the room, Kim Griffith from Doddridge County advocated for early education as a prevention method.
Hit it at home to where these kids know what's the possibility, the ramifications of possibly leading this type of lifestyle. Or
Tasha Moneypenny Knight of Clarksburg says school counselors are key to early intervention.
I've had children come to me and say that they've gone to their counselor and said that they felt really depressed and down, and the counselor has told them, well, come back when you feel suicidal. And so between that time, they could be finding a drug that will help them cope with it.
They do not know how to handle the situation. I don't think it's lack of just sympathy or empathy. I think it's lack of knowledge, of training. They do not know how to handle these situations. How can you treat someone if you don't know how to treat them?
The table over, Jason Toast of Buchanan shared stories of how drugs have affected his life.
At 17 years old, I was charged with trafficking, and from that point on, I've never, ever been able to get no type of assistance from nothing or nobody since the age of 17.
He and Shannon Garrett of Weston were discussing legislative changes in the ability to qualify for government aid programs like food stamps and housing assistance after being convicted of a drug crime.
I think this would be great, but I am for trying to keep people off of thinking that they need to go get on food stamps and welfare.
We can't look at it like they shouldn't have done that, they shouldn't have did this. We got to look at that they already done it. Now that they've already done it, what can we do to help them?
Similar discussions continued at tables around the room before the group came back together to take a survey on the priorities they want to focus on in their region. Region 4, which includes 13 counties from Monongalia to Braxton and Doddridge to Tucker, decided their first priority was the continuation of prevention resource officers, or police officers stationed in schools, also called PROs. Their second, expanding the Recovery Coach Network, both things Paxton says the region has focused state grant money toward in the past.
That's where a lot of the $7.5 million went to in this region. Your priority was recovery coaches. So you have more recovery coaches in this region than any other region. So therefore, I think that people recognize how important they are and how much they can do. So they want to expand it. So it's exactly the same thing as the PROs.
Statewide, Paxton says regions are also placing a 1-800 call center at the top of their lists. It would serve as a central place for anyone to call to find resources within their communities for treatment and recovery. Regional meetings will continue over the next few weeks throughout the state. For a schedule of those meetings, visit our website, wvpublic.org. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Bridgeport.
West Virginia University's baseball team is going to have a new home in a few years. A groundbreaking on the stadium occurred yesterday. But as Beneduccio reports, it's also going to be big for the community.
The stadium is located in the community of Granville, near Morgantown, off of I-79. That part of Monongalia County is growing by leaps and bounds. With the stadium will come a new interchange for easier access from the interstate to the ballpark. It's been a lot of change for Patricia Lewis, the mayor of Granville. She's been the mayor since 1991.
In my wildest imagination, I could never dream that a town, a small town in Monongalia County, could become home to a WVU sports team. So we are excited. It's a wonderful thing.
The baseball stadium will also host entertainment events like concerts, as well as games for a minor league baseball team. Lewis says it's hopefully going to bring even more growth to her community.
This is an exciting chapter for us. We are a small community. All the development up here, has been wonderful for our economics, for our small town.
Now this is a team right here. This is a team. Close in, move in. Line in.
Guys, get a little closer up there.
Why don't we
closer
together?
All of us squeeze in.
And sideways, inhale.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
We
got to
lean out.
Slide down a little bit. Slide a little closer together. Here we go. All right, here we go. Everybody ready? We got a shovel in the dirt?
Yeah, you better get up there.
I'm three. One, two, three. Hey! One more time. There we go. That was just practice. There we go. On three. One, two, three.
Camera's pointed that way.
Come on, man. Oh, the camera's pointed that way.
All right, real quick. If I could have some quiet. One final word from our coach, Randy Mazey.
Randy Mazey, the head coach of the WVU baseball team, says this new stadium will play a vital role in the stability and success of his program.
Well, with the move to the Big 12 Conference that we made last year, It's one of the best baseball conferences in the nation. And if you want to be nationally competitive with teams like that, your facilities have to be competitive. And I think we're not only going to be competitive, but I think we're going to surpass a lot of programs in this league with the facility that we're planning on building.
Officials hope the stadium will be ready for the 2015 baseball season. The minor league team expected to make the stadium home will be from the New York Penn League. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:38. Sunny and breezy today. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s. Wind gusts could be up to 25 miles per hour. Mind how you go this morning. There is some patchy, dense fog. Mostly clear overnight with lows in the 30s and 40s. Partly sunny on Saturday. There is a chance of rain Saturday afternoon. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s. Sunny and clear on Sunday.
And this is your chance to support West Virginia Morning. Thank you, Beth Voorhees and the crew from West Virginia Public Radio's news department. I'm Scott Finnem, executive director here. I'm joined by Chuck Anzalevich, one of our hosts, and we are here to ask you to support that sort of local programming from your neighbors and your community. The number to call is 800-723-4687.
We have less than an hour and a half before 9 o'clock this morning, and 9 o'clock is kind of a deadline for us because we have a challenge grant of $3,500 that we can get if we, we've whittled it down to less than $9,000. So if we can get $8,700, less than $9,000 between 9 and now and 9 o'clock this morning, we will have an extra $3,500 from one of our generous contributors. We also had a call from Morgantown, West Virginia, from a listener who really enjoys our programming and they think that we're doing a great job. Also, Nan Brown of Wheeling, West Virginia, loves the new website. And our new website is wvpublic.org. You can go there and check it out. All kinds of interesting information about our programming, the people that work at West Virginia Public Radio, and also, of course, a way for you to contribute to West Virginia Public Radio. Go to our website at wvpublic.org or call us right now at 1-800-RADIO-87.
The rest of West Virginia Morning is coming up in just a minute. We know we can do this together. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family, your neighbors, your community. Do it for everyone who relies on West Virginia Public Radio. Do it to be part of something that makes West Virginia and our region and the world a better place. That's the sort of person you are, and you've just been waiting for the right time. Well, the right time is now. We are in the final hours of this campaign, another day or so, and it'll be over. And we want you to feel that great sense of relief and warmth and ownership when you call 800-723-4687 or when you go online to our beautiful brand new website, wvpublic.org. Click that Donate Now button. We have another $8,716 to go. Thousands of people are hearing us. We know if you call in, we'll make it. At 800-723-4687.
When Ralph Peer held recording sessions for Victor Records in the state line town of Bristol, Tennessee, Virginia in 1927, he discovered the Carter family and Jimmy Rogers and essentially started the country music industry. Columbia Records wanted to get in on the Appalachian field recording business, so the company sent one of its top producers to nearby Johnson City. A box set of those original Johnson City recordings has been released. Wayne Winkler of WETS in Johnson City, Tennessee, has this report.
Frank Buckley Walker had signed Bessie Smith to Columbia Records and was responsible for the first commercial recordings of Cajun music. But early country music was his specialty. He recorded Charlie Poole and his North Carolina Ramblers, Gid Tanner and Riley Puckett in New York. He did some recording in Atlanta, but Ralph Peer's successful recordings in Bristol inspired Walker and Columbia to try field recording in the same general area. So in October of 1928, Walker placed an ad in a Johnson City, Tennessee newspaper with the headline, "Can you sing or play old-time music?" That was how he set up the first of what became known as the Johnson City Sessions. 85 years later, the music Frank Walker recorded is being released in a 4-CD box set by Bear Family Records of Hamburg, Germany. Ted Olson of East Tennessee State University's Department of Appalachian Studies, who initiated and produced the Bristol Sessions, has done the same for the lesser-known Johnson City recordings. As with the Bristol set, he and British country music scholar Tony Russell have composed a lavish 136-page book detailing every aspect of the sessions, including photographs, biographies of the performers, a day-by-day session log, lyric sheets, and discographies.
Once the Bristol Sessions box set was put out in 2011 by the Bear Family Records label out of Germany, that same label took an interest, after I had a long conversation with them, in releasing this rest of the story, you know, the Johnson City sessions. And so for the last, say, 15 months, my colleague on the project, Tony Russell, who's based in England, who's a country music scholar, we basically brought this story out of obscurity because there hadn't been much research conducted. We really had to get creative to find out who these people were and where they came from, why they came to Johnson City. How did their records sell? What were the rest of their creative lives like? Did they continue to play music after they kind of disappeared into obscurity?
Have you heard the many stories told by old and young with joys of the many deeds of daring that were done by the Johnson boy? Hop up, pretty girls, don't be afraid. Hop up, pretty girls, don't be afraid. Hop up, pretty girls, don't be afraid. Hop up, pretty girls, don't be afraid.
Some of the performers at the Johnson City Sessions had recorded for Ralph Peer at the Bristol Sessions. The Grant brothers, Jack and Claude, had, along with Jack Pierce, been Jimmy Rogers' backing band. But Peer separated them and recorded the band as the Tenever Ramblers. Frank Walker recorded Jack and Claude Grant, Pierce and Claude Slagle as the Grant brothers. But other acts didn't have nearly as much recording experience. One such group was the Motesville String Ticklers from West Virginia.
There were 8 musicians in the band, and they all came down, according to the stories that the family tell, in the back of 2 cars, with the instruments placed into pillowcases because they could not afford actual instrument cases. They made 2 recordings here, are their only recordings that we have of this band. The one known as West Virginia Hills is considered the definitive recording of the West Virginia State song. It's a much prized recording that far too few people have ever heard.
Oh, the West Virginia hills, how unchanged they seem to stand, with their summits pointed skyward to the great almighty's land. Many changes I can see, which my heart with sadness fills, but no changes can be noticed in those West Virginia hills. Oh, the hills, beautiful hills, how I love the West Virginia hills.
When Frank Walker returned to Johnson City in October of 1929, he recorded some of the most memorable songs of the Johnson City Sessions, including this one from an obscure group from North Carolina called the Bentley Boys, Down on Penny's Farm.
First of all, people probably have heard it before, perhaps in the context of the Harry Smith Anthology of American Folk Music, which is a legendary album that was released in the 50s that's credited with launching the urban folk revival of the 50s and 60s.
Come, you ladies and gentlemen, listen to the song. Sang it to you right, but you might think it's wrong. May make you mad, but I mean no harm. It's just about to run his own Penny's farm. It's a hard times in the country out on Penny's farm. You move out on Penny's farm, plant a little crop of bagger and a little crop of corn. Come around and see you gonna flit and flot till you get yourself a mortgage on everything you got. It's a hard times in the country out on Penny's farm.
This song has inspired a lot of musicians over the years. Bob Dylan, for example, dedicated not one song, but 2 songs to his love for this particular song.
Come here, ladies and gentlemen, listen to my song. Sing it to you right, but you might think it's wrong. Just a little glimpse of a story I'll tell about an East Coast city that you all know well. It's hard times from the country, living down in New York town.
Second of 2 Bob Dylan songs inspired by the Bentley Boys' Down on Penny's Farm, recorded in Johnson City, Tennessee in 1929.
One of the most famous people who came to Johnson City for the Johnson City Sessions was Clarence Ashley. Clarence Ashley is a legendary musician who, in fact, is credited with having introduced the world to Doc Watson. Mm-hmm. Because Clarence Ashley recommended that Ralph Rinsler, you know, who is affiliated with the Smithsonian, to come down to make a record of Doc Watson in the early 60s. And then, of course, Doc took off from there. But Clarence was famous in his own right with this marvelous voice, very high-pitched and mournful, and this unique frailing banjo style.
Oh, the cuckoo is a pretty bird. She wobbles as she flies, she never hollers cuckoo till the 4th day July. I've played cards in Dingbong, I've played cards in Spain. I'll bet you $10 I beat you next game.
Olson and co-writer Tony Russell were nominated for a Grammy Award for the book that accompanied the Bristol Sessions box set. The book accompanying the Johnson City box set is even more extensive and represents a tougher job tracking down information.
We had to work through secondary sources, namely family members who remembered people. And to find these people wasn't easy, but the way we did it was we put ads and articles in local papers all over the Appalachian area in eastern Kentucky, western North Carolina, and of course East Tennessee. And lo and behold, people started calling us and writing us from out of the blue, saying, we saw this article in the paper, and we'd like to tell you about our ancestors who played at the Johnson City Sessions. So Tony Russell and I just started to gather the stories over the last 15 months based on this very rudimentary technique of getting the word out. And we were able to get some wonderful stories.
Next weekend, a series of events in Johnson City will celebrate the release of the box set, including an album release party at Johnson City's famed music venue, The Down Home, on Saturday night, followed by a recording of the public radio program Mountain Stage on Sunday night. Relatives of the performers at the original sessions will be honored at these events. But unfortunately for some of the performers at the original sessions, many of the records didn't sell well. Some were never even released, because the final day of the 1929 sessions coincided with the first day of the stock market crash. That's one reason the Johnson City sessions were not as well known as those that took place up the road in Bristol. But Ted Olson contends that the Johnson City sessions have their own special place in music history.
It may not have the kind of overarching impact of the Bristol sessions box set. I mean, after all, people have been calling the Bristol Sessions the Big Bang of country music for some years now. There's no comparable statement you can make about the Johnson City Sessions in the respect that they didn't necessarily create a genre almost, you know, single-handedly. We don't make any such claims for the Johnson City Sessions. The Johnson City Sessions, in my opinion, are very important because they show Appalachian music in the widest possible variety at the cusp of the Great Depression. And I think that's important because really the music that sold during the Great Depression tended to be more commercial music. The music on the Johnson City Sessions is kind of that last bastion of traditional music finding voice in a mass media environment. Three of the strongest records on the Anthology of American Folk Music were recorded in Johnson City in 1928 and 1929. It's a quieter story. It's a story that gets, perhaps, you know, has gotten a lot less attention than the Bristol Sessions. But it's a story whose time has come.
For Inside Appalachia, I'm Wayne Winkler in Johnson City, Tennessee.
Going back, Johnson City. I'll go back and stay someday.
And West Virginia Public Radio's Mountain Stage will perform a live show at East Tennessee State University Sunday evening as part of the celebration for the release of this boxed set. And speaking of Mountain Stage, Bottle Rockets performs Big Lots of Love on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Okay, this song comes with a story. This is the oldest new song. This song's been around since last fall. Song comes with a story. See this guitar? Ain't it pretty? Don't you think this is a pretty guitar? I think this is a pretty guitar. I wanted this guitar for 20 years. 20 years I wanted this guitar. Money was never the issue. I'm a roots rock legend. I'm rolling in money. Made of money. Okay? Mountains of money. The issue was getting the wife's permission to spend the money on this guitar. That was the issue. 20 years of trying, and finally it came true, okay? She finally said, okay, you got yourself a credit card. You got a musician's friend credit card. Friend, go get you one. So they got back in stock. They had the color I wanted. It's the guitar of my dreams. I got it 2 years ago, and I haven't played anything since because I love it so much. So since my wife finally buckled under and decided to let me live the dream, I decided it would only be proper to write her a song on this guitar. A love song, because I really do love my wife, and I wanted to write her a really true love song on my new guitar. But here's the problem, is I've written love songs before and told her that they were about her, but they weren't really about her, and she knew that, okay? It was like they weren't about other girls, they were about other things disguised as girls, and I told her they were about her, and she busted me immediately. So she's smart, she's a lot smarter than I am. So I had to write her a love song on this guitar that would not only be heartfelt, true, and like so honest that it would make her cry, but it would also have to make her cry because she knew I was thinking about her when I wrote it. So to do that, I had to come up with a clue. There had to be a clue just between her and me that she would know that when I put that clue in there that I was actually thinking about her because nobody else would have turned me on to that kind of an idea. So I thought about the clue for a while, and I realized what it is, and I never knew why she kept this between her and me. But she never really tells anyone else but me, and she tells me continually, and it's how much she loves shopping at Big Lots, okay? And she gets really great things from Big Lots, things I wouldn't even think they had at Big Lots. If I would have just waited, she probably could have found this guitar at Big Lots. But anyway, okay. So now we had it. Love song, honest love song was the goal. Big Lots was the clue. And this is what I came up with.
Rockets with Big Lots of Love. You can listen to this song again and more music on Mountain Stage Sunday afternoon at 2 here on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Board, and Ashton Mara. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.